we're back with What's Ailing America, where our answer today is telling the truth about Jews as a hate crime, with my special guest, Deanna Spingola. And I have to just say that, you know, this whole Petraeus thing just cracks me up, you know, as if having an affair is unusual in the District of Criminals. You got to wonder what really is happening behind the scenes that, you know, they brought this forward. But anyways, before the break, we were talking about 9/11, and I also just want to mention the Talmud is another very revealing book in regards to, you know, what their holy scriptures say about having sex with children as long as they're under 9 years old and things of that nature. But get back to 9/11 if you want to, because, of course, this is a very important thing. Almost everybody knows that there's serious questions as to the, you know, quote-unquote official story, but yet somehow the movement has been fractured, and, you know, there's the thermite people and the directed energy weapon people. The bottom line is this was obviously done intentionally, and, you know, just another false flag, just like this, the Frankenstorm we just had. You know, these things keep being done over and over and over again to distract the people, to terrorize them, to get them to go along with the program in terms of forced evacuation and all of these different things. And I know that more and more people are waking up because of all this, and that's the good news. So go wherever you'd like to go.
Okay, I'll start with Petraeus for Petraeus. I personally believe that he was not going to go along with the situation with this latest 9/11 event. And so they just revealed the dirt that they had on him in order to marginalize and minimize him and get rid of him. And it certainly worked. And it has worked in a number of cases, whether you're talking about Spitzer, or whether you're talking about Blagojevich, or whether you're talking about a number of politicians. If you move the wrong way, if you make the wrong step, or act like you're going to, they will publicly embarrass you and bring out all the evidence that they have against you, whether it's pictures of you having having sex with minor children or whatever. They will take you down as publicly as they possibly can. And getting back to 9/11, I was talking about Building 7. You had a young woman on the BBC talking about Building 7 as if it had already fallen, and this was about 5 p.m. Our time here. And she was talking about it having fallen, having collapsed, when there was a picture of it in the background. And so apparently they didn't get their timing right.
Yes.
And it didn't fall until about 5:20 p.m. New York time. And so that was a very interesting thing. You mentioned the Kol Nidre. Now, the Kol Nidre really is not a behavior. It just means that Jews, Kol Nidre, literally means all vows, and it asks God to annul all vows that Jews make to God during the coming year, either innocently or under duress. In other words, vows that people make unintentionally. I think a lot of people do that. You know, we might pray and say, oh, if you'll do this for me, I'll never, whatever it is, whatever bad habit we have. And I think that probably every politician in Washington, if you're talking about promises that they've already made, or promises that they are going to make in the coming year, they all lie, and all of them certainly make promises that they don't intend to keep right before they're elected, or right before election day, and then as soon as the polls close, then all representation flees. But the Kol Nidre is, I mean, it's kind of minor when you consider other things like Purim. Now, Purim is something that we don't cover enough, and we don't talk about it enough. We don't understand it enough. And if you're going to really look at their official policy of revenge in the behavior that they have taken against whole populations, then I think you have to talk about Purim. And you mentioned that I was going to talk about Hitler today. And so let me just give a little background. On January 30th, 1933, because Alfred Hugenberg and Franz von Papen recommended him, Reich President Paul von Hindenburg appointed Adolf Hitler as the chancellor in a coalition government of Germany. Court historians would have us all believe that Hitler immediately began oppressing, terrorizing, and sanctioning violence against Germany's Jews, and then ultimately relegated them all to numerous concentration camps, and individuals or groups may have entertained anti-Jewish attitudes and participated in periodic acts of violence in Germany, as people have done in other European countries throughout history. However, there was never any government policy of oppression against the Jews. It did. There were laws taken after the Jews declared war, and there were just a few influential Jews living in the United States and Britain who claimed that the German government was intentionally instigating violence against the domestic Jewish population, despite the assurances of Germany's Jewish Central Association that the German citizens and the government had no intentions of harming the Jews. After all, Germany was one of the first countries to emancipate their Jews well over 100 years before Hitler ever came onto the scene. Yet, certain Zionist Jews living elsewhere decided to provoke the governments of the countries in which they lived to launch a war against Hitler and Germany. And it had nothing whatsoever to do with anything he said, because he didn't utter the word Jew publicly for at least 6 months. Now, Udo Valendi wrote, and I quote, on March 12, 1933, the American Jewish Congress leadership convened a three-hour session and voted to commence a national program of highly visible protest parades and demonstrations. The focal point of the protest would be a giant anti-Nazi rally on March 27th at Madison Square Garden. The Jewish war veterans were the very first anywhere in the world to declare openly their organized resistance to the Nazi regime. They had fought Germany once, and they would fight them again. Now, here's the interesting thing, and I never hear anybody talk about this. The Jews in the United States celebrated Sunday, March 12, 1933, as Purim, a Jewish holiday memorializing the revengeful activities recorded in the Old Testament in the book of Esther, wherein the Jews slaughtered 75,000 Persians. And this is the day, on Sunday, March 12th, the day that the Americans celebrated Purim. Now, Purim is not always celebrated on the very same day every year. It is usually in February or March, and they use their own calendar to designate the day. But when you consider that they decided, as they were celebrating Purim on this Sunday, that they decided that they were going to go after Germany and to go after every single solitary German on this day of revenge, it takes on an entirely different connotation. So what they did, the head of the Jewish War Veterans, which was only one group, there were several groups that wanted to take revenge. Of course, they were all Jewish groups. The Jewish war veterans appealed for an American boycott of all German goods. Essentially, it functioned as financial warfare against Germany in the midst of the Depression. Now, keep in mind, the entire earth was suffering under this Depression, an economic depression. There were 6 to 7 million Germans out of work. And the Jews at that time living in Germany, while many of them suffered, a lot of them were receiving money from out of the country from their relatives. And on March 23rd in 1933, at New York City Hall, at least 20,000 Jews protested, while other Jews held demonstrations outside of the North German Lloyd and Hamburg American shipping lines. Jews in New York City called for boycotts against German goods throughout shops and businesses in the city. On March 24th, the Daily Press of London announced in front page headline, Judea declares war on Germany, stating that the Jews worldwide had initiated a boycott on all German goods to express a unified hostility of 14 million people against the German government, especially Hitler.
Okay, there's that music again. Yeah, this is pretty amazing stuff, and that's what you will learn if you get Anna's books, The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, and The Zionist Seizure of World Power. You got to check this stuff out, folks. And to anybody that you mention the Jew problem to that doesn't want to believe it. And we're back with What's Ailing America, where Andrew today is telling the truth about Jews is a hate crime, with my special guest, Deanna Spingola, spingola.com. And I just want to review what you were saying before the break, Deanna, because you are so knowledgeable about these issues, and I've learned so much from you. But now this is a whole new thing that you're mentioning about Purim, and I just want to make sure I got it right. So basically, this is a revenge policy that was started in March of 1933. They had never, quote-unquote, celebrated this holiday before then?
They have celebrated it since the Old Testament times with the Book of Esther. It is a holiday that they celebrate every year, and it is a holiday where the Jews get drunk, they do whatever they want, but it is a revenge policy. And what they did back in the Book of Esther, they slaughtered 75,000 Persians. And let me just give a little background. Let me just scroll down here. In Babylon, King Cyrus of Persia was going to, let me just scroll here. Esther was basically one of the concubines of the king. Haman was her uncle, and they were going to. Haman was going after the Jews, and she went to the king and pleaded for him, and even then, people were afraid of the Jews. In Esther 8:17, it says, "And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them." Now, one cannot literally change their genetic background, but when you become a Zionist sympathizer, or you want to just cover your butt, so to speak, then you endorse whatever the Jews do, especially if they confuse their religious affiliation with the people of Israel, as we have in the current Israeli state. Anyway, in Esther 9:3, it says, "And all the rulers of the provinces and the lieutenants and the deputies and the officers of the king helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them." And this is applicable to the politicians in London or Washington or wherever they are. But the Jews were under attack, and Esther went to the king, and the king altered his policy, and thereafter, and it was not necessary. It was not necessary. But in revenge against the Persians who were criticizing the Jews took out their revenge by slaughtering 75,000 of them. They didn't have to. They did not have to do that, but they did it.
So the king allowed the murder.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. He allowed it, and whether you're talking about ancient Babylon or whether you're talking about contemporary events, the fall of Babylon, though it's ancient history, is relevant to the retribution policies that numerous governments have applied in just two of several relatively recent events like the two world wars, targeting countries, exploiting opportunities, and then dispensing vengeance is not merely coincidence, but rather a calculated long-term policy. And so Purim is something that the Jews celebrate each and every year. They get drunk, and they also do revengeful things, to execute revengeful policies, which they did on March 12, 1933. The Jews, the leadership of the American Jewish Congress in New York City, decided on the day of Purim that they were going to go after Germany and every single solitary German in the world, and they were going to exterminate them. Just as they exterminated 75,000 Persians in the book of Esther.
And you got to see the genius of this, because while they're going after the Germans, they're going to rewrite history to pretend that the Germans went after them. It's a perfect opposite day.
Exactly.
Wow.
And when you think of all the other things that they did, I mean, King Cyrus, he served the same purpose then as Alfred J. Balfour, as President Harry S. Truman. They always acquiesce. They always acquiesce to what the Jews want to do. But consider some of the things that have happened during Purim. And this is quite amazing that Purim, here's just a few things that have happened. The Highway of Death occurred on Purim, February 27th to 28th, 1991. Okay, the Highway of Death. The war had been called the Iraqis gave up, and the United States called a halt to the war, the first Gulf War, and they said, okay, we're going to let the Iraqis return to their homes. Well, that's not what happened. The general, let's see, what was his name? Oh, gosh. My mind just went blank. He ordered an attack on all of these Iraqis who were returning and created what is known as the Highway of Death. They literally slaughtered all of these Iraqi soldiers who had given up, who were holding the white flag. They slaughtered them. They buried them in ditches alive with their equipment. They slaughtered these people, and these people had surrendered. Okay, they surrendered. The American military started the war on Purim, March 17th, 18th in 2003. They started the Libyan War on Purim, March 19th through the 20th, 2011. Okay. Now, one of my listeners, Mark, said, you know what? I'll just bet that they are going to attack Iran on February 23rd, 24th, 2013, because that's when Purim falls next year. See, it doesn't always fall on the same date. Right. But if you look at all the stuff that they have done on Purim, it's pretty amazing. And you can, let me just look down this list. The massive earthquakes in Chile in 2008, in China in 2010, both happened on Purim.
What about Fukushima? Wasn't Fukushima in March as well?
We'll have to look that date up. I believe you're correct.
Yeah. Because, the word on the street is that Japan was supporting the Palestinians. So, of course, they had to be sent a little message.
Right. And basically, Purim is a celebration of revenge by the Jewish nation against anybody that gets in their way. It's not a coincidence. These are deliberate, and Purim literally means to bring to naught, to break, or to crush. And isn't that what the Jews did to Germany?
Exactly.
If not before the war, then the British bombers, the U.S. bombers went in and totally, completely destroyed the country. They bombed everything, all the cities that had over 50,000 residents. Then they attacked all the cities that had less. And when you consider all of these things that happened on Purim, well, it's just too much of a coincidence to ignore.
And in my opinion, let me just say, okay, so they're about revenge for people that have taken note of what they really are. You know, the opposite of revenge is justice. And I hope that at some point the humans will figure out a way to get justice against these psychopaths, because it's just getting more and more obvious every day the extent of the suffering that they're causing, because they're behind everything. The one thing you didn't mention, of course, was the medical mafia and their protocols that talk about inoculation of diseases, which, of course, we all know is one of the main ways they're killing and maiming people and destroying fertility and altering our genetic structure. You know, the idea that to point out their crimes is in itself a crime, you know, it's so bizarre. I oftentimes feel like I live in the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, their Purim, their revenge seems to not just go after single individuals, although they do. And, of course, you can see the revenge. I mentioned Blagojevich, and I mentioned Spitzer, and now we have Petraeus. It's not necessarily during Purim, but it certainly is revengeful. Now, when you consider, remember Madonna in her elaborate costume at the Super Bowl halftime? Now, her Kabbalist name is Esther. So she's dressed up in this, obviously in this very interesting costume. And I don't know, when was the Super Bowl? Was that in March? I don't know.
I'm not a Super Bowl person, but what?
Me neither. But Super Bowl, well, I'd have to look that up. It was at this during the Super Bowl. It was kind of a sacrificial finale, and I'll have to look it up and see when it happened. But it's interesting that her Kabbalist name is Esther. So there is a website that you can go to, and it's called timeanddate.com/holidays/US/Purim. So if you, and you can go down, you can put any year that you want, any year that you want. Up at the top, you just signify the year, and then you can see the dates that Purim fell in each and every year. And when you look at 1933, or thereabouts, let's see, 1900, they have a category, 1900 to 1949. And they executed a lot of the so-called the NSDAP criminals during Purim. They did a lot of things. If you look at 1933 and throughout the war, you find that they did a lot of things on the days that on which Purim fell.
Can you please repeat that website? timeanddate.com/holidays/US/Purim. Okay.
Now, why are they so bent on destroying Germany? Why are they? What have they got against Germany? Well, Germany was the very first country, although it was not a country as it is now, or as it was by 1871. But Frankfurt was the very first city-state to emancipate their Jews. And they allowed them all of these freedoms, and they could come and go as they pleased. They didn't have citizenship, but they had all of the amenities. They could participate in any kind of field occupation that they wanted to. But the one thing that really bothered the Jews is that in Germany, in Dresden, on September 11th through the 12th, 1882, Germans held the first anti-Jewish Congress. Now, the date is very significant, September 11th, 1882. Uh-huh. And they created a manifesto of the first anti-Jewish Congress, and it was held in, as I said, Dresden. And it was called the Manifesto to the Governments and Peoples of the Christian Nations Threatened by Judaism. And several countries that met, to figure out how to counter the Jewish influence throughout the world. They wanted to settle the Jewish question. Now, this was certainly long before Hitler. He hadn't even been born then, by then. Mm-hmm. And the delegates were in agreement that previous government initiatives in defense of the Christian state had been ineffective. And so the whole meeting was to try to figure out, to document the international Jewish conspiracy with historical facts rather than just with inflammatory phrases. Too many of us use the inflammatory phrases without any kind of documentation. And what they planned to do was to document. Now, we know that they have been kicked out of at least 79 countries at least 109 times. And so what they did was that they were going to go over the past centuries and figure out, the Christian peoples that were threatened, not only the Christian peoples, but the Arabs, the Tartars, everybody. Everybody had been threatened at one time or another. And so the whole purpose of that meeting was to document this and then figure out what the heck they were going to do. Because they recognized, hey, we've got a very serious problem. And they wanted to figure out, okay, how are they doing it? What are they doing it? How are they doing and what are they doing? They had become the undisputed masters of the financial markets, even by then. They dominated the stock exchanges. They determined the price of money and the monetary values. They determined the price of commodities. They determined the price of industrial goods. And they were the ones that were controlling the capitalist purse. They also controlled the fruits of the farmers' and businessmen's labor. They dominated the banks and all financial institutions in general. They were the creators of fictitious values, the master of credit and monetary turnover. They were in control of everything. And they honored or benefited their own fellow tribesmen while closing off anyone that was a non-Jew. Okay? So, they monopolized everything. And the people in Germany and the other governments that met, the other representatives from other governments that met during this meeting in Dresden, were trying to figure out what to do. Okay, so we move forward during World War II. Now, remember, in World War I, you did not have an invasion of Germany. You didn't have a real invasion of foreign military forces until World War II. So what city in Germany that did not have absolutely any military function whatsoever, what city was a very classical city where they had beautiful churches, where they had cultural icons, where they had beautiful, beautiful buildings that were hundreds of years old? What city did the Brits, the Britsies, and the Americans decide to bomb, and for what reason? Was it not out of revenge? Because that is the same city that they met to figure out what in the heck they were going to do about the Jewish influence throughout the world. And didn't they do? And that meeting was on September 11th, 1882.
And that city was Dresden, correct?
Exactly.
Wow.
They totally destroyed Dresden, killed thousands of people, because many people did not think that they would go after Dresden because of the historical significance of the city. And so a lot of the refugees from other cities that had been bombed out fled to Dresden because they felt safe there. And they weren't. Because of the revengeful tactics of this tribe, I personally believe that this is the reason that they bombed Dresden. And it's because, and it is to follow this this revenge policy that was established in the Old Testament, by Esther against the Persians. And if we were to look at when the bombing of Dresden occurred, I'd have to look it up here. Bombing of Dresden. If you type in, you know, just about anything that you want to kind of compare. Bombing of Dresden, February 13th, 1945. Okay, let's go to the website and see. In 1945, February 27th was Purim. Pretty darn close.
Right. Amazing. Yeah, it's so obvious once you really start to do the research, which I'm so grateful to you for doing. And that's why we have to make people face this. Of course, today, the Christian churches have been totally, totally Zionized, Judaized, whatever you want to say. I live in North Carolina. You can't find a church around me that doesn't have the word Zion in its name. And then, of course, we have preachers, especially like this Hagee monster, who's just such a warmonger, you know, kill the Muslims, and telling all his people, send money to Israel. It's disgusting. They just can't face reality because they follow minions like this monster. And
sure.
I still can't get it, you know, thou shalt not kill, okay, unless it's a Muslim. How does that work? And you have a person like him. I can't stomach to watch him very often, but whenever I do, it's the same crap. And he's one of the biggest warmongers there is. You know, we got to bomb Iran, we got to do this, we got to do that. And the people just follow. They keep putting money in the plate. I don't understand it.
Well, it's because of that infiltration, and it's because of Christian Zionism, which started back in 1809 in London. And that was the same year that Nathan Rothschild moved to London. He joined a Freemasonic lodge there. And I believe that he was probably the financier of the Christian Zionist movement, which ultimately moved over to this country.
Big time. Okay, we're running out of time so fast. One thing I wanted to bring up before we run out of time, and I had sent you this as well. For all of you followers of naturalnews.com, Mike Adams, the self-proclaimed health ranger, he has a document on his website now. Everything is rigged, health, politics, finance, and more, but here's how to beat the system. And it's truly amazing as you read this document. He's got an excellent list of how everything has been corrupted. However, the one thing he doesn't mention is the force behind it, which are the Jew psychopaths. His solution is to basically don't play in their rigged system. Good luck with that. You know, if you have a social security number and a birth certificate and things of that nature, it's very difficult to extricate yourself from the system, especially when they have control of your children, especially if you're getting quote-unquote benefits from the government, which basically means you sold your children to them. And the way I look at this is that he's basically a puppet for Alex Jones, who has been outed by many people for doing the same thing, that is, ignoring the Jewish problem. And in my opinion, there's no solution to any problem unless the cause is identified. And so I just wanted to point that out to people to check that out. Mike Adams has a lot of good information on his website. 90% truth, 10% lies. That's how the disinfo people operate. Okay, we're going to a break. We'll be back for the last segment. And when we come back, Deanna, I'd like to hear what you have to say about that. We'll be right back, folks. Stay tuned. And we're back with the last segment of What's Ailing America, where our answer today has been telling the truth about Jews is a hate crime, with my special guest, Deanna Spingola. Let me encourage you to listen to her show Monday through Friday on republicbroadcasting.org from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time, because having a show 5 days a week, I don't know how she does it. I could never do that, although I'm on pretty much a show every day at this point, but on other people's shows. But you really need to educate yourself so you can get information to share with others. because this is a very important time in history, as these psychopaths are trying to destroy the entire planet, our health, our fertility, you name it, and it's time for us to stand up and say no. But I just wanted to ask you, Deanna, I don't know if you got a chance to review that article.
Yes.
Mike, but yeah,
yes,
what do you think?
I read it again during the break.
Okay.
It says in one of his paragraphs, even war is completely rigged. Wars are started with false flag attacks engineered by the imperialist USA. Then all the reporting on war is completely censored to shield the American public from the truth of how horrifying it really is. The entire experience of war is sanitized, processed, homogenized, just like the processed cow's milk you're hopefully not drinking. Okay. He does not mention the wars in history. He does not mention World War I, World War II, and basically what he should have said was history has been rigged, and the lies that we were told about the Civil War, the so-called Civil War, about the Spanish-American War, about World War I, about World War II, were all rigged, and they were all started with false flag attacks, and we cannot believe anything that the government has told us about any of those wars, including World War II, and including the supposed enemies that we are supposed to hate. Now, this is a gentleman, an individual, who will not say the J word. He will also never mention, he has referred to the Nazis. And of course, we know that Alex Jones is a Nazi hater, baiter. When you hear a broadcaster, a radio host doing Nazi this, Nazi that, you know that these people are ignorant. Okay? Or they're simply covering up the real truths and the real culprits. Because if you're going to study history, if you're going to study all these things that he lists, particularly talking about war, so you know that he's thought of war, and yet he won't touch World War II, and he will not reveal the truth about World War II, and certainly, while we don't know what he knows, nobody can tell what a person knows. But doggone, if you're going to do historical research, if you're going to do history, if you're going to look at all of these other issues that he talks about, you must have run into the real truth. And if you're not revealing the real truth, then you're concealing it.
Right. And under the political system, of course, he talks about the banksters. I love it when people talk about the banksters. Who are the banksters? I mean, that's so obvious who the banksters are. And as you were listing a lot of the things that they're doing with the stock market and stuff, one of the most amazing frauds that people need to research are these weather derivatives, where they're actually selling on the commodities market weather derivatives, meaning that people who are controlling the weather are betting on whether there's going to be droughts, floods, famine, etc. I mean, talk about insider trading. That brings it to another whole level. So, in my opinion, of course, he's being promoted heavily by Alex Jones, and so he's basically like a mini Alex Jones. And he's giving 90% truth, but he's ignoring 10% lies. And as you said, for him not to be talking about the Hollow Hoax especially, we have a mutual friend listener that told me how important it was for me to listen to your shows for probably a year on the Hollow Hoax before I finally said, okay, I'll do it. And then when I did it, I was like, oh, wow, now I see why that's so important. I had no idea the immensity of this. And to me, that is analogous to the vaccine lie as far as history goes. Once you find out that Hitler was trying to protect his people from the Jewish parasites, that he had developed a system of, I don't know what you'd call it, money or whatever, that basically rescued Germany from devastation financially. They were on the way up, and that's why they had to be taken out. And this is a very important thing that has to be covered up now, because as these banksters, who are all Jews, their Federal Reserve, their IMF, all the rest of it, are bringing the world to financial devastation through their debt, which is a total fraud. All we have to do is say, Federal Reserve, we're not going to pay you for printing money. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. Same thing with the IMF. All these countries could do that. Austerity is over, and we can get, you know, proceed on with business. And this is, I think, one of the scariest things that they're trying to cover up.
Certainly. Certainly. And they completely feel it. You know, when we see a swastika, we automatically think of the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust. And so to hide it, whenever you think of Hitler, you're not going to think of his economic program. You're not going to think about how he put 7 million people back to work. You're not going to think about the Autobahn. You're not going to think about all of the building and all of the infrastructure that was developed during his from 1933 to 1939. You are just going to think of the Holocaust. And that's because it's been drummed into our head. And if you really look at it, and not only that, from that day forward, from the end of the war forward, and the occupation, the continued occupation of Germany, Germany has been paying reparations to Israel. Not only have they been paying reparations to Israel, but we've been paying reparations to Israel because aren't we guilty too? Because we didn't stop it. Stop what? Well, we didn't stop their phony psyops. And so, we're paying for the official United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Half of the money that comes, funds that museum comes from the taxpayers. So we are funding a religion. We are funding a religion because the Holocaust is part of their dogma. They say in the Talmud, which is very, it's a, you know, like 22 volumes. But they say that 600 Jews have to be burned, have to be sacrificed, before the Jews can return to Palestine. Well, so they made up this great big lie. They tried to float it during World War I. It didn't work. People wouldn't believe it. And so they did it, they floated it during World War II. And then they had all the technology, the pictures that the U.S. government took, that Eisenhower promoted. So they floated it. And people believed it. Then you have Hollywood enter into the picture with all of their movies about it. You have they have TV movies about it. So we've been inundated with stories about this thing that did never happen. And then, of course, you had the attempted march on Skokie. And then you had the Holocaust Commission. And now everybody believes it. And we have a menorah at the White House instead of a nativity scene during Christmas.
It's amazing. Okay, we're almost out of time. I don't know if we have time to even really get into this, but one other thing I wanted to address is this issue of blood libel, which is, according to the ADL website, which I think is hilarious, they talk about it as a centuries-old false allegation that Jews murder Christians, especially Christian children, to use their blood for ritual purposes, such as an ingredient in the baking of Passover matzah. And as it turns out, there's been actually quite a few documented cases of this in history, which is even admitted on this website. It says scholars have documented about 100 blood libels that took place from the 12th to 16th centuries. So this is another thing that people don't realize, that they're drinking our blood.
When you think about the fact that there's aborted fetal tissue in such things as Coca-Cola and other products, I think that there's more than just the Jews who are drinking blood or eating, I even hate to say the word, I mean it's...
Being cannibals, but you see, the people that are taking vaccines made out of aborted fetuses, drinking Coca-Cola, eating Kraft Foods and all these other... This Cenemix company that's using aborted fetuses as food flavoring, they're not doing it knowingly. They're being hoodwinked into becoming cannibals, and that's pure evil. These people know what they're doing, and they're behind.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right. And there are documented cases. I have a book sitting right here next to me. It's called Reckless Rights. It's by Elliot Horowitz, and it's called Purim and the Legacy of Jewish Violence. And then there's also some information about Damascus, which occurred in 1840. It was the first real event for which the Jews collected money from other areas of the country and sent it to Damascus to help the poor, poor Jews there. And they recognized at that point how profitable it was to have these events where Jews were supposedly targeted. That it was very profitable.
Yes. During things around 180 degrees, the psychopaths become the victims. It's truly amazing. I will have to score one for them in terms of how nefarious they are. Well, we're out of time already. I can't believe how fast the time went, Deanna. Thank you so much for being on the show. Once again, folks, go to Spingola Speaks.
At LionTalkRadio.com, you could say that we're all talk.
Listen, folks, if you don't know this much by now, I will tell you, you know, so you will know it officially.